What's up, gang? Thanks for joining the Undiplomatic Podcast, the show with undiplomatic takes about the foreign policy scene. I'm your host, Van Jackson. I got a solo episode this week, a lot to talk about. Wanted to check in, and it was super hard to fit this in the schedule. This is like the busiest time of year for me. And between that and the time zone difference, it's super hard to get the stars aligned with Matt and Julia. But hopefully we'll get that shit sorted real soon. I wanted to start off today, this is not levity necessarily, but with a short freestyle with a nice anti-ICE punchline by my man Hazard in LA. And this is not a song that's out yet. He literally just spit this on a beat that was made up.
Look, now they treat us like we got a taste for tear gas and less than lethal rounds. Rubber bullets hit your nose, silly, you leaking on the ground. They mad that I'm speaking out and want me to keep it down. Music done lost the message, just follow the leader now. I guess I'm Elise and Brown and black allies in the hood. Shout out to the white homies using their privileges for good. I ain't saying cause you white that your ride has been easy, but statistically the pigs are gonna do you less greasy, believe me. I know that life get hard regardless, even though it made me cold. You know if I could fall from heartless, my heart just break while I'm watching my people get treated less than equal, call criminals illegals. If we do nothing but break the law daily, why you want us cooking food, cleaning houses, watching babies? It's crazy, modern day slavery if you're quiet. But if you ask for rights, they gon' say you starting riots. If we not sending our best, then how we keep surviving? I'm a second generation Chicano and still I'm thriving. Inside this rhyme is some truth to that ass. If these raids are really legal, why they doing with mess? And through all the flags, y'all mad when you seeing the Mexican. When have you Trump supporters got a thing for the Confederate? Maybe it's just me, but MAGA has disgust me. Following a fraud who ain't even worth discussing. For the umpteenth time, fuck a racist sucker's life. I let this 40 get warm, it's forever fuck ice. Yo, it's heads to the mic, get it fucking right.
Yo.
It's 40 on Fridays.
Dope. Best protest rhyme I've heard this year for sure. Probably since like Black Lives Matter in 2020, right? So I've been meaning to write about the political economy of ICE, and in fact, I started, and just the nature of how I write these days, I'm kind of like jazzing across multiple things. Said this the other day, I can't remember. Oh, it was that I did a teach-in about militarism under Trump. It was with the teach-in network, Roots Action, and Diffuse Nuclear War, which is associated with Daniel Ellsberg before he died. But basically, in that talk, I said immense amount of ICE funding that the quote-unquote Big Beautiful Bill gave. It's a way of putting the Proud Boys on the payroll, right? ICE is obviously Trump's secret police, but it's also this vehicle for the far right. Right? It's kind of institutionalizing what would have other existed as simply like white supremacist militias and fascist bros, right? And it's not just me saying that. Like, check this out. This is the Department of Homeland Security is fucking recruiting fascists and wannabe fascists, right? Where's this at? Let me show you. They've been publishing all kinds of social media promotions about civilization, your heritage, American heritage. That's like the code word for fucking white America, basically, like white fascist America. But this is like, defend your culture. No undergraduate degree required. This is literally meant to be a jobs program for right-wing coded white men of the working class. It's a jobs program for fascists, right? The political aspects of full employment. It's a classic article by Kalecki. You should look it up. But this is like not necessarily new. It's very in your face, right? Very in your face. You can't deny this at this point, right? And so what we have is an economy in the US that's being driven into the absolute shitter, right? Supply chain disruptions are on the way, right? Store shelves with fewer options and fewer supplies on the way, right? The tariffs, the effects of that are about to be felt now that they're starting to become real. We've been living with the narrative of tariffs for 7 months, but they haven't been implemented for the most part. So people are like underestimating or discounting the sort of like disastrous effects this is going to have, I mean, on the world economy, but on the US economy and on American consumption in particular, right? America as a destination for exports. So all of that's coming, right? I just read a thing in the Financial Times, the big three automakers, they're like in the process of losing their, you know, EV green tech subsidies from under the Biden years because the Inflation Reduction Act is being undone. But the big American auto firms are, even before that happens, even before the green tech reversal, that in the Financial Times, they were saying they're already on like life support. Like their sales are way down. They're losing revenue. And this is separate from whether they can still have continuing access to the critical minerals, supplies, batteries and shit that China has a lock on, right? Assuming China doesn't cut them off, which is why the Trump administration is playing friendly with China right now. It's because China has the fucking leverage, you know? I don't have time to go into that right now. That's like a probably a worthy topic for another day, but it's also not new. You know, like the national security state knows China has a pretty strong stranglehold on critical minerals, which is one of the things they're trying to like relieve themselves from so that they can be free to pursue fucking domination, you know, as opposed to like, maybe let's just get along with them and not do fucking primacy. And then we don't have to worry about them choking off critical minerals. No. We need to be able to dominate them. And therefore, it's not acceptable that they have, you know, choke point control over anything. That's us. That's our job, right? So anyways, talking about ICE, this Proud Boys on the payroll shit, like if you're driving the economy into the gutter, you're like massively increasing unemployment in America, you're causing a recession. All of that's happening, like bubbling in real time, right? Under those conditions where surplus labor is going up, even as you are purging brown surplus labor from the country, purging immigrants from the country, purging foreigners from the country, just period. Like now you have a solution for the white male cross section of surplus labor to be useful, to be given a purpose. You attach the American flag to it, right? Come work for ICE. That's what the fucking DHS is doing and telling us, right? So they're creating the economy is creating the conditions where people who are going to be desperate for good jobs will need to go work for the security state, for the surveillance state, for a literal fascist regime. And they wouldn't have many options otherwise, or any options otherwise. And on top of that, they're making a very specific recruitment pitch on culture, race, heritage, right? And they're lowering the standards for it even. So anybody with a beer belly and a Glock can roll up and join this force. And it's going to have institutional like legitimacy, let's say, right? So had this been Biden 2.0 or Kamala or something, you'd still have these fucking beer belly fucks running around the country doing violence, threatening violence, menacing people, plotting against the government. The difference now is that they're drawing a paycheck from taxpayers and from the state, and they have institutional legitimacy of state power, right? So, not great. All right, next story, the anti-intellectualism of Pentagon life. So, this is kind of nuts. This story has been like trickling out over the last few weeks. I wrote about this in the newsletter. Yeah, so the Aspen Strategy Group, the Pentagon was going to participate. They were going to send officials to be part of the Aspen Strategy Group. It's like any other like think tank network or think tank conference. It is quite elite. It is a sort of like liberal pro-globalization, liberal primacy institutional site. But these guys were cut off from the Pentagon, and this crazy statement got issued. Pentagon Press Secretary Kingsley Wilson issued a statement after saying that they were not going to send, they were canceling Pentagon participation in the Aspen Strategy Group. The statement that the Pentagon press secretary read out said, "The Department of Defense has no interest in legitimizing an organization that has invited former officials who have been the architects of chaos abroad and failure at home. Senior representatives of the Department of Defense will no longer be participating in an event that promotes the evil of globalism, disdain for our great country, and hatred for the President of the United States." I said this in the newsletter. They had me until they said evils of globalism, basically. This is not the only instance of this. There was something called the Indo-Pacific Deterrence Dialogue, quote unquote, which is a who's who of hawks. It was with three different like national security centers at Australian National University and two centers at Australian National Universities. And then the US Studies Center, which is hosted by Mike Green, who's a neocon, basically. He used to be at CSIS and worked for the Bush administration, long story, but Asia hands know him. Anyway, it's a den of hawks. These are the guys who like think about deterrence all day and they think everything is deterrence, you know, coerce your way into domination and life ain't life grand. And sucks for everybody else, right? This is just how they are fucking wired. This is the thing that I was part of for a time. And it's the thing that I most react against when it comes to the national security state and like the failure of imagination and morality, which leads to bad strategy, which is like the heart of my ongoing critique. But anyway, this Indo-Pacific Deterrence Dialogue, the Australian side was partnering with Pacific Forum in Honolulu, which has gotten pretty fucking hawkish. It didn't used to be. And then CSBA, Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, which they're defense nerds, it's defense intellectuals, but like they're the most fucking aggro hawk people in DC. They don't weigh in on day-to-day issues much, but like they're the ones who are doing the in-the-weeds work on behalf of military primacy. And they come up with some pretty deranged ideas. Like I'm a real big critic of CSBA, but that's the group that was sort of mind melding. And they're of course obsessed with the Taiwan war scenario and optimizing for World War III with China, all of which of course I'm fucking against. And so not a fan of this Indo-Pacific deterrence dialogue. I am not a fan of any of these think tank apparatuses that create and like legitimize these echo chambers with government that socializes government officials into either doing what the think tanks want, which is always to the benefit of defense contractors, or the think tanks becoming the mouthpiece for government officials, in which case they've like lobotomized themselves. This whole like thing with the think tank world shutting off, criticizing the, you know, liberal think tanks and Aspen Strategy Group for being like evil globalists who are against the president. First of all of these institutions, yes, they're all anti-Trump. They're all anti anybody who's against their agenda, you know, which is why I'm not invited to them. But they are also in, like, I guess you could call them globalists, depending on what you mean by it. Like, they are advocates of a kind of globalization, and they've been propping up that system and legitimizing it for decades. But evil? It's more like banality. That was what I said in the piece. It's like more banality than evil, right? This is just like the everyday reproduction of like the elite social order that is needed to sustain a particular arrangement of power. So you have this elite ruling class and it's supported by a technocratic class, and they live in ideology without like thinking that they're in ideology. Like, I think they think about practical problems, like a Taiwan war. To them, that's a practical problem. It's obviously dripping with militarist ideology and American exceptionalism. It's fucking insane. It's literally unwinnable. Which means it's a gravy train for people who think about war all day, because it's like an endless resource to justify funding for Indo-Pacific deterrence dialogues. And so, except for the whole evils of globalism part, I'm actually like very on board with what the Pentagon is doing here. They should be careful on their own terms and in terms of like my larger preferences. The Pentagon should be careful about letting think tanks shape their agenda, about lending their legitimacy as the national security state, lending that legitimacy to non-governmental institutions and public intellectuals, quote unquote, who are basically just government insiders, severing that tie between national security think tanks and the national security state is quite valuable, quite important. It's something that, like, I mean, in activist circles, you try to physically disrupt in you know, like direct action. You try to disrupt these events sometimes. Now they're being disrupted on some level by the Trump administration itself. So this is one of these weird situations. Like, I have styled myself as like pure opposition to Elbridge Colby, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy under Pete Hegseth, right? But he's making a decision here. It's not clear to me how much he's in control of the decision, but he's making a decision here that is preventing MAGA foreign policy from being co-opted by these liberal primacy fucks whose answer to everything is more bullets and more commitments and more war. Literally, that's the fucking one of those things or more is the answer to every fucking problem in the world that ever comes up. Kind of fascinating, kind of fascinating. I think it's an unmitigated good that the Pentagon is not sending defense officials to participate in think tanks anymore. The problem with this is that I feel like after a few months or something, this shit's going to change and the Trump administration is going to start sending government officials to participate in these things again, but they will have changed the terms of participation such that the think tanks are going to be fucking bootlickers, as if they're not already kind of bootlickers, you know? Or there's going to be selective, it's going to be the friend-enemy distinction playing out in think tanks. So the friend think tanks are going to be the ones who host events and shit, and the enemy think tanks are going to be the ones that get basically investigated. They get policed out, iced out, pun intended. And that, like, that's how it's going to be, I think. But we're going through a period right now of, I don't know, course correction or whatever, where the Trump administration is trying to rewire this relationship so that it has all the power. And the irony in that a little bit is that it kind of already does have all the power. These think tanks are full of cowards, full of cowards. And there ain't much thinking going on in them to begin with. They exist to largely legitimate the MAGA foreign policy agenda anyway. You know, the Trump administration's protest about participating in think tank events, the whole thing, they're not fully banning it. They're just like heavily scrutinizing any participation. So it has to get approved at the highest levels, which is probably the Bridge Colby level or Pete Hegseth level. The participation is not completely cut off necessarily. It's just going to be under a lot of like politicized scrutiny. It is what it is, you know? It is what it is. Anyway, I'm not mad at this decision at all. You know, the intellectualism that goes on within the Pentagon and the national security state, what good has it served? Look around. We're still doing the war on terror after 20 fucking years of this shit. The fascism that we're experiencing is downstream of the choice to do the war on terror. And the choice to do the war on terror was a little bit because of a racialized worldview in America, but also this is America in decline. The war on terror was part of enforcing a world order by force, because that's what you do when you seek to preserve primacy and prolong it. The Pentagon was not a bunch of high-minded intellectuals, and now it's being brought low. The Pentagon is fundamentally anti-intellectual, and it's ridiculous. It's lipstick on a pig to try and suggest otherwise. So there's no great loss being had by MAGA foreign policy cutting itself off from these suit-wearing, scone-eating legitimators of barbarism. I don't know if you guys are aware of this protest movement, this network called Palestine Action. They're a direct action group, nonviolent, I should stress. And their single issue priority is stopping the genocide in Gaza. They're advocates for a ceasefire in Gaza, but stopping the genocide at all costs is kind of their thing, right? So 2 years ago, they're operating primarily out of the UK, but they have, I don't know what you would call it, franchises elsewhere. So 2 years ago, four Palestine Action activists were arrested and convicted of conspiring to damage a factory in Wales. The factory belonged to this military contractor called Teledyne. And they had broken into the factory to disrupt its operations, spray paint graffiti, shatter walls, physically make the environment like inoperable so that it cannot produce and then export military equipment to Israel. This is literally nonviolent, but it is the destruction of private property. But it's destruction in such a way that it literally slows the movement of the machinery of death, right? That's the idea. That's the whole point of direct action. It's protest, but not protest that lets the status quo go on. It's protest that alters the status quo fundamentally, right? Well, this July, UK ministers not just banned Palestine Action. It is banned in the UK now, but they have a terrorism law under which Palestine Action and any of its members get prosecuted, which is to say they're being identified and labeled as terrorists, right? And there's a version of this that's playing out in the US right now. And in New Zealand, the right-wing government is looking at whether they should follow suit, basically. Like, this is kind of a live discussion. It's not quite really getting enough attention. So this is a big deal, because if it's not obvious, the reactionary politicians and the national security state, not just in the US, but in the West, they are literally using Gaza and Palestine as an excuse for active political repression. And it's the fascist kind of repression, you know, like charging nonviolent protesters with a fucking terrorism law. You know, so like, if you care about civil liberties, if you care about opposing fascism, then you have to be for peace. You have to be against genocide. You have to be for a ceasefire. And because of that, you have to be against the repression of Palestine Action. You know, direct action is not terrorism. Direct action is trying to stop state terrorism, in particular against Palestinians. And then there was one more wrinkle to this, which is like literally just yesterday, 2 days ago, The Guardian had a piece about this fucking guy, Lord Dannett. I don't know how to say his fucking name. Let me see if I can pull this up. Look at this guy. Ex-army chief. He's a paid advisor to Teledyne. He has been advocating. He's a member of the House of Lords. He has been advocating for the criminalization of Palestine Action. He's been beating this drum. He was also, it sounds like, interfering in the investigation of the Palestine action against the factory that like he's being ultimately, you know, paid by, advised by. So Richard, let me read this out real quick. Richard Dannett, I don't know if I'm saying that right, former head of the British Army, wrote privately to two separate Home Office ministers asking them to address the threat posed by the group after its activists target a factory in 2022. The police officer in charge of the investigation had told Teledyne executives that it would not be wise to have a member of the House of Lords poking around in a live criminal case. Doesn't sound great. The thing that's notable here is that there's actually a capitalism angle that you cannot disentangle from this national security oppression, this terrorist designation, the securitization of nonviolent protest and political repression. It's bound, its advocates, some of its advocates, like this specific Lord Dannett guy, they are benefiting materially, financially from propagating the national security state in the UK, and correspondingly criminalizing and using state power against anyone who would oppose, anyone who would raise their voice against, anyone who would take direct action against the UK's national security state, the UK's military industrial complex. So it's like, who benefits in a profit motive, like a materialist sense, happens to be perfectly aligned with continuing death dealing in Gaza, continuing militarism, right? And the UK right now is jacking up military spending in a big way. And it's imposing austerity, a Labour government, no less, imposing austerity on its own people so that it can finance this system of death dealing. This is all fucked up. And the idea that Palestine action should be the ones eating it rather than this fucking House of Lords guy, pretty fucked up. We have, on my other show, the Bang Bang Podcast, we have an episode scheduled with Malcolm Harris that is going to be a fucking banger. We're going to talk about the documentary, the now banned documentary, in fact, about Palestine action. It's called To Kill a War Machine. And we're going to talk about a couple other movies too, Empty Metal, which I've not seen yet, but it's on the schedule. It's going to be like a direct action themed episode talking with one of the smartest left intellectuals I know, but also one who happens to be smart on direct action tactics. And so we're going to have a special episode where we end up talking about Palestine action some more. So look out for that on the other show, the Bang Bang Podcast. And then finally, something is emerging and it's profound, right? There is a massive world transforming conflict that is starting to take shape between the BRICS plus nations, which is 56% of the world's population, and the West, right? And it's partly over Gaza, I'll explain, but Trump kind of gives the game away that it's more than that. Like, it's also absolutely about US primacy, like being able to dominate and dictate the terms of unequal exchange in political economy, currency used, trade flows, capital, patents, intellectual property. So this drama is not getting very much coverage at all in the media. It's kind of even worse than that. Like, it's not getting any serious attention from analysts or policymakers or strategists. And this I find quite perverse, right? So you probably did not hear that a month ago, like mid-July, the Hague Group met and had a summit. And the Hague Group, for those who don't know, is a coalition of 8 states who are demanding the enforcement of international law, and their emergency focus, for obvious reasons, is on Israeli genocide of Palestinians, right? So the Hague Group issued 6 concrete demands against Israel. And this was, again, mid-July, so like plenty of news cycles since. And their demands that I imagine most listeners of this show would support are the following. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. So their 6 demands are: 1, prevent the provision or transfer of arms, munitions, military fuel, related military equipment, and dual use items to Israel. 2, prevent the transit, docking, and servicing of vessels at any port in all cases where there's a clear risk of the vessel being used to carry arms, munitions, military fuel, related military equipment, and dual use items to Israel. 3, prevent the carriage of arms, munitions, military fuel, related military equipment, and dual use items to Israel on vessels bearing our flag, and ensure full accountability, including deflagging, for non-compliance with this prohibition. 4, commence an urgent review of all public contracts to prevent public institutions and funds from supporting Israel's illegal occupation of the Palestinian territory and entrenching its unlawful presence. 5, comply with obligations to ensure accountability for the most serious crimes under international law through robust, impartial, and independent investigations and prosecutions at national or international levels to ensure justice for all victims and the prevention of future crimes. 6, support universal jurisdiction mandates as and where applicable, in national legal frameworks and judiciaries to ensure justice for victims of international crimes committed in the occupied Palestinian territory. These are reasonable, liberal demands. This is simply asking for state compliance with international law. At the speech, somehow this is like just buried, not getting any attention. But Colombia is one of the eight nations who are part of the Hague Group. And Gustavo Petro, who's president of Colombia, he gave a speech at this summit that is profound. It's actually a signal flare about the future. So it's obviously in Spanish, but there's subtitles here, and I'll like summarize the key of it for those who are listening and not watching.
Es simplemente un experimento de los mega ricos, tratando de demostrarle a todos los pueblos del mundo cómo se le responde a una rebeldía de la humanidad. Piensan bombardearnos a todos. Los que estamos al menos en el sur, pero terminarán como en el Guernica, bombardeándose a sí mismos con armas extranjeras. Y esa perspectiva de barbarie obviamente mata el multilateralismo para que se encuentren las naciones. Mata la idea de una democracia global, mata toda la institucionalidad internacional. He pedido una reunión de la CELAC con el gobierno de los Estados Unidos y no hay ni respuesta escrita.
It's worth watching in full. It goes on from there. But the key sentence that he says is that Gaza is an experiment by the mega rich to show the peoples of the world how they will respond to a rebellion of humanity. They plan to bomb us all, at least those of us in the global south. Everything is changing, and I feel like people aren't paying attention to the wrong things, right? Just last weekend, the Sydney Harbour Bridge, there was a pro-Palestinian protest, a mass protest in Sydney, fucking Australia, bro. Between 90,000 and 300,000 people on that fucking bridge. That's mass protests, okay? There are versions of this happening all over the world. The Irish president called on the UN to invoke Chapter 7 of its charter, which could be the authorization for an international military intervention to break the siege on Gaza and end Israel's campaign of forced starvation. This is the world that is forming, right? What's forming is like a global north versus a global south. The white races versus the darker races is being imposed on us, you know? Like, there is a detectable global color line in world politics, and it's more subdued than in the Age of Empires, like when Du Bois was writing about it, but it's there, and it's a basis, it's a line of conflict, contestation. The militaries of rich white nations are going to turn against the resource-rich global south to enforce regimes of extraction and dispossession. Colombia's president knows that. That's why he's saying that, right? What they do to Gaza, what we allow to happen to Gaza, is going to happen to all of us. The global south knows this because they've been on the receiving end of this for most of the 20th century, and it's coming for us, right? And so I can see this like terrible civilizational conflict coming into view. That's our current trajectory. What I think Gustavo Petro can see is that we can shift this. The trajectory is not the inevitable outcome. He wants to shift the timeline so that we don't make global race war or whatever inevitable. But Trump is targeting the BRICS nations, right? It's the extra tariffs for BRICS countries. He said it's specifically about primacy of the dollar. You know, like China is to some extent being used as a wedge here or a justification for a cleavage between the BRICS nations and the West. This is a cleavage that is not like natural. It shouldn't be happening. It's happening because of Western governments' choices. And the Gaza genocide is going to keep forcing harder and harder choices. And if you don't confront it and oppose it, it's going to lead to like larger civilizational ruptures. Like we're barreling toward a nightmare that like remaps global conflict. I'm concerned, bro. I'm concerned. All right. So that's all I've got for now. Like and subscribe and all that stuff. Check out the newsletter on hyphendiplomatic.com. And yeah, stay healthy. Take care of yourselves. Peace.